Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
But I came out of church planting world, and in both worlds, what I've learned is you just never have enough people, right? Enough volunteers, enough leaders. And so I want to talk some about that. Obviously, talk more broadly than specifically, just because there's so many different people in the room and different needs. But let's, I'm open to questions. I'm open to specific questions, and I'm even open after this for other questions. And I use the term leaders more than volunteers because I really want to recruit leaders. I spend more time recruiting leaders than I do volunteers, because if you recruit leaders, you get all the volunteers you want. It really is a matter of finding new people who want to lead, and that's critically important. But every organization, and that includes the church, and you should know also, I came out of the business world, so I had 15 years in the ministry world. I came out of the business world, so I think business-minded many times. But every organization has one common element, and that's people. And it's our job as leaders to motivate, to train, to recruit, to teach, to lead, and to grow people. We're to make disciples as a church, obviously. And the word leaders appears 118 times in the Bible. And I would say this, you may have success or failure in your church based on your ability to recruit new leaders. So it's critically important that we find new leaders. The success or failure of any organization, again, that includes the church, is directly proportional to its leadership potential. So where the leadership lid exists, that's where you're going to stop. So if you're going to grow, you got to find new leaders. And I'm going to go quicker through my notes because we started a little late, and I want to give time for questions at the end if we need to. So let me give you some steps to finding new leaders. Again, let me back up just a second. I'm pretty blunt and I'm pretty practical. The number one place in our church that's always looking for new people is in our preschool ministry. Any of you in preschool or oversee preschool? I'll tell you what, we just went through a situation there, and I'll go ahead and get it out of the way in case I forget it. I did not know. I've been in the church 3 years. I'm really on my second tier of leadership there. We had a lot of issues to work through. We've grown dramatically. We're three times the size we were when we got there. And so I was busy with a lot of things. What I knew about preschool was my measure of preschool success is the number of complaints I get, literally. Because preschool moms complain the most if there's a problem. I mean, they just do. You want to take care of your babies, and I understand that. They want them safe. They want them taken care of. And so if I'm not getting any complaints, things are going pretty well in that area. And they weren't. We have a great preschool director. She's wonderful at it. What I didn't know, and the tension kind of rose to a point where I started to hear these things over a period of time, was that we had a very a controlling environment there to get new people. We were looking for people. We were looking for volunteers. But they weren't volunteers. It was mandatory. You know, if you want to put your kid in here, you got to serve. And that's just a terrible system. It just doesn't work. Your church may do it that way. I'm just telling you it's wrong. That's all I'm saying. It doesn't recruit leaders. It recruits people. Bodies, warm bodies, and that's the worst model to try to replace. And I understand the tension in my preschool director was just huge when I had to push this issue through. I mean, I could just see the tension welling up. And her husband happens to be they were there before I got there, is our business administrator. So I had tension on both ends. And I get that. I totally understand that. And willing to totally walk through that with them. But it's got to be a volunteer system. And that's not just because I come from Tennessee and I now live in Kentucky. It's got to be a, that was kind of a joke, volunteer, you get You're with me? So it's got to be a system where people want to be there. Do you want somebody taking care of your kids that didn't want to take care of your kids? And what was happening was people, I wondered why there were so many babies crying in the auditorium. It's because they didn't want to be, they didn't want to have to serve. So they just took their kid with them. Terrible system. It will not work. And so I say all that. So we've reversed that. Let me give you the other side of that. We've reversed that system. I told her we didn't have to do it overnight. But we began to reverse that. I said, I'll be your best recruiter. But it's got to be volunteer. We've got to raise the value of serving in this area. And she sent me an email just a couple of days ago. She said, I have had new people every single week, and they want to be there. So that it can be done. I'm going to close these doors. So let me share seven things. Again, they're big ideas, but we'll try to provide some practicality to them and then answer questions. But the first thing, if you want to replace leaders or develop new leaders, is you got to catch the vision of multiplication. It's got to be in your mind. If you don't believe in the system of multiplication, then you're not likely to participate in it. You've got to recognize that multiplication is part of kingdom building. We're looking for the church to grow so the kingdom can grow. And to grow the kingdom, we need new leaders. Growth in the kingdom will be greatly impacted by the number of leaders we develop. So understand the system of multiplication. You have more potential for kingdom building if you are a builder of kingdom leaders. Compare the impact difference of your church. If you lead as many people to the best of your abilities, how many people can you lead in 10 years? But what if you lead a group that produces a leader of people each year who turn to produce more leaders each year and so on and so on? There's no comparison. You've seen those math problems. There's just with just compound interest. There's no way to compare those two. So you've got to get in your head, I don't want to recruit bodies. I want to recruit leaders who recruit bodies. And leaders who recruit leaders. It's a system of multiplication. You've got to understand it that way. What our preschool director was trying to do was lead, and I'm not picking on her, she's wonderful. No kids are safe with her. I mean, she's like a Nazi when it comes to walking through her halls, you know. She'll ask me, where's my badge? You know, I'm like, I'm preaching today. I don't have my badge on. But so she's great. But what she was seeing was we've grown from and I'm just using numbers to give you an idea. We've grown from 800 or 900 people 3 years ago to 2,500 people. And most of those are young families. So almost all the new people have impacted her directly. So she's seen her ministry go from here to here overnight. I get that. Total stress in that. But what she was trying to do was manage everybody in the room. All of her volunteers, all of her, and the number just keeps growing. Do you see how stressful that is? What if she just led this table? And this table led these two tables. And these two tables led these. Do you see the difference? You've got to get this idea of multiplication in your mind if you want to have a leadership recruitment, a leadership development type of culture. The second broad point is this. You've got to be intentional. It can't be something that just happened. You must make a decision. You're going to be intentional about finding new leaders and putting energy into leadership development. Most of the churches that, and I work with a lot of churches, most of the churches I work with have no form of leadership development whatsoever. I mean, like none. It's totally a recruitment model. There's nothing to do with development at all. I don't know what your church is like, but you've got to be intentional to develop new leaders, not only recruit them, but develop them. Be purposeful in recruiting, but don't forget you're taking people somewhere. If all they do is just show up and sit in a room to take care of a baby or whatever it is they're doing, that they're going to bore with that over time. Most people are. Not everybody, but most people. The quickest way to get someone to grow is to give them responsibility. see it as a major part of your goal to take some people into positions of leadership. Think beyond today. Think bigger. Again, think kingdom building. So be intentional with this idea of leadership development. Here's number three. And they get longer, so I'm going short on the first ones. Create an environment conducive to produce leaders. Critically important. Create an environment that's conducive to produce leaders. Leaders don't develop under dictatorship or under control. They rebel against that. And maybe I'll get off the preschool illustration in just a minute, but if you're a preschool director and everyone has to come to you to make a decision, they're not developing their own skills. They're never going to be leaders themselves. So you want to develop them to be able to make decisions for themselves, rational decisions. When I got to our church, the whole church. We had over 100 page policies and procedure manual. And we now have a 10 page. Because so much of the things were just very controlling. I use preschool as an example because in my presentations to try to change that, because I would say if your policy manual has the word diarrhea in it, it's probably too long. What happens if that happens, you know? And I think you can empower a person in a room to figure that out, can't you? You know, that's bad, right? You do something about that and you handle it. I mean, obviously there's rules and health things and all that have to be spelled out. But you could do that and empower that in a room to handle some of those situations without it being an overall policy. I was working with a church yesterday or just talking to them. And a new leader and really excited to be on board. And one of his charges is to increase communication in the area he leads. And so he's going to put out a weekly newsletter type thing by email and get it out to increase communication. Then he found out that with every email, he had a 10-minute conversation to explain the procedures. It has to go through an editing process. It has to go through this department before it can be sent out, and then it has. Okay, so you want me to increase, but you've like handcuffed me to do this, right? So look at your system and say, does this even produce leaders? I mean, would leaders even want to be a part of this? If people are afraid to have an answer under your leadership or to make mistakes for fear of doing something wrong, they're less likely to attempt to lead under your leadership. Give people an opportunity to rise and fall. Leadership is less about managing people and more about enabling people, empowering people. So you've got to make a development environment. And I think that's a great question to ask yourself and maybe even ask some of your key volunteers or maybe some of your new volunteers. Do I have a climate conducive for leadership development? Is it welcoming, friendly, forgiving, loving? Do people feel like they can raise to an authority level in this church? Here's number four. Begin to identify potential. For me personally, this is a very big deal for me, developing leaders. We could not have grown, 300% in 3 years had we not developed a lot of new leadership. And so we instantly went to work looking for those people. So I'm constantly looking for good people. I'm looking for qualities in people that I think have the potential to be future leaders. Always doing this. Here are some of the qualities that I look for in potential leaders. A general concern and love for others. I think that's first. I think we've got to develop servant leadership. So I look for people that just love people. Those are usually great people that organize. Hey, would you three get together and let's organize or let's figure this out? People who are not a complainer. Because frankly, I don't want to be around them. And the Bible says it's wrong, right? It's a sin. So I'm not looking for people that are always complaining. And in fact, one of the things that I see in a lot of churches that I go into, I saw it in our church, is some of the people who complain the most are in the positions of leadership. Well, why? If it's bad, let's fix it. Let's don't keep them there. Or let's at least disciple them to understand that the Bible says do everything without arguing and complaining, doesn't it? It doesn't say do some things. Do everything except this position, right? It doesn't say that. I look for people who are teachable and open to suggestions, people who demonstrate a propensity to lead through excellence in following, reliability. You know, if people will not show up for meetings, I'm not probably going to put them into a position of leadership very quickly. Interest, people who have a general interest in the system, the group, the people, the church. Obviously, people with character. I want to surround my people, myself with people of character. Potential. And you know, I think you have to develop, if you're going to be intentional about this, you have to develop spiritual discernment for potential in people that can't see it in themselves. And, you know, I think that's one of the thing. I think the more you pray for that, the more you have spiritual eyes for that, the more you'll see it. And how many of you have had somebody believe in you when you didn't believe in yourself? Anybody? I certainly have. I mean, when I was 23 or 24, I'd been leading in the world for years, since I was in high school. I just have always been in positions of leadership through college and then as a young adult. I had a pastor pull me aside and just whisper in my ear. He said, Ron, I'll never forget it. He said just like this. He said, Ron, you have the potential to be a giant killer. I need you to kill some giants for the kingdom of God. That was such a huge word for me. That pastor's still a huge influence in my life. He's not been my pastor for 30 years, but he is a huge influencer in my life even today. I just talked to him last week because he saw something in me and he spoke into my life. You imagine, that's kind of that vision of multiplication. Can you imagine speaking into someone's life and telling them they have the ability to do something they don't even know they can do, what that will do for them? Isn't that a very godlike thing to do? We see it throughout the scriptures. I also look for a positive attitude, confidence, people skills. You know, if someone has the heart for leadership, some of those things I just mentioned, you can almost always develop skills later. You know, the Jethro model in the Bible, Exodus 18:21. You can't do it all. But the Jethro model says this: able men who are capable, fear God, so they're followers of God, men of truth, obviously this means women too, believe the word, hate dishonesty, so they have character, and share burdens, so they love people. It's a great model. I mean, that's who you're looking for potential leadership. So begin to identify potential. And if I were you, here's what I do. I've got it in Evernote right now. I constantly have an Evernote file where I'm plugging names in there, constantly. I send out an email to our staff about once every 2 or 3 months. Just sent one out literally on the plane right over here. Said, who do I not know that I should know? Who's come in the last month or so that I don't know them, they have potential to lead. Of course, by this point, they know what I'm looking for, that Cheryl and I need to reach out to. And my wife and I constantly are going to dinner with a young couple or a couple who we see potential in, that have the potential to lead at higher levels in our church. We're constantly looking for those. Of course, obviously, I'm not looking for, I will, but I'm not personally recruiting for preschool or for any specific area. I'm recruiting for general leadership for the church, maybe in preschool, maybe in any other area. But we are constantly doing that. Long story short, we just went through a season of discerning whether we were supposed to stay at the church for another season. We came there with the intent to turn the church around and help the church position itself to grow for another 100 years. That was kind of our personal mission. And we've done that. And so we feel like God has left us there for another season. We don't know what that means. But as a result of that, because we know we're there, I want to find some new leaders. And so we went, that's what prompted the email this week. So constantly want to be looking for those people. And I would just keep a file and just work through them. if you aren't meeting on a regular basis with people who have the potential to lead down the road, you're not gonna fill this pipeline of new leadership. And I'm very honest with people. I'll say something like, "Look, I'm not asking you to do anything today. I just think there's something in you that may have the potential for the future, and I would love for you to consider in the future being a part of this." And I'm just constantly doing that. And almost always, they're waiting for somebody to do that. Here's the fifth one. Humble yourself and share responsibilities. There are three reasons pastors don't delegate. I don't know. I've been a pastor, a senior pastor, since I came into ministry, so I don't have the benefit of having been a student pastor and that sort of thing. So I don't know about student pastors. My son's a student pastor. Maybe I'll ask him. But there's three reasons pastors don't delegate. Pride. They don't think anyone can do it as well as they can. Selfishness. They don't want anyone to get the recognition or share the power. And ignorance. That's the third one. They don't know how, or they haven't taken time to learn. That's the reason they don't share responsibilities. And that's a hard word. I mean, but it's the same for all of us. We can be, you know, if somebody's going to launch some new project and the church is going to be happy with it and who's going to get the credit for it, you know, I want the credit, right? I mean, that's just human nature in all of us. But we have to humble ourselves and share responsibility. It's like when I let the student pastor preach or somebody and they come up and say, "Man, isn't he incredible? You better watch out, pastor," you know, and stuff like that. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" You know, there's just this inside where we don't want to share that responsibility, that position. We got to be careful and guard our hearts against that. And that means you continually invest in your own personal growth, too. You can't take people where you aren't going. The only way to make sure you can lead people somewhere is to make sure you're going there yourself, and anything other than that is hypocrisy. So ask yourself, do you have your own plan for personal growth and development? Because if you're going to develop these new leaders, you've got to be growing. I have found that today's generation especially likes honesty. They'll follow people that are transparent, that are authentic, that they can believe in. So don't be afraid either to just share, you know, with this potential new leader, "Look, here's an area I'm weak in. I'm just not very good at this, and I could really use some help in this. I see in you that you're good with details. I stink at it. Could you help me with that? Could you make us better in that area?" And I recruit for that too. I recruit for the weaknesses that we've got in our system and for people we don't have to do certain things. And I believe a lot of that, and I think this is even more so as culture is changing, as the church is changing, we're going to have to rely less on paid staff and more on volunteer staff in the future. And so we're going to have to recruit high-level volunteers in the church, high-level leaders who can do things we can't do. So don't be threatened by others. They'll bring different styles. They'll do things different than you, maybe even better than you. Just take pride in the fact that you found them. I saw a quote on Facebook yesterday, Andy Stanley quote that Focus on the Family put out that said, I'm paraphrasing, "Your best," my wife reposted it, "your best contribution to society may be the child you raised and gave to society," or something like that. That's a great quote, isn't it? And your best contribution at the church may be finding that high-level volunteer that'll be there even maybe longer than you are. But take pride in the fact that God used you to find that person. Be willing to fail personally. You may pick the wrong people. That's okay. I see too many churches. You know, one of the things that happened at our church is you had to be there a year before you could on committees. We had 45 committees when we got there. I was expected to be on every committee. We now have four. So we've come a long ways, and I only serve on two of them. But you've got to. But in that process, the problem was they wanted somebody to be there a year before they served on a committee so they could test them. Well, there's something in Scripture about testing, but that's for the senior leadership. That's not for how much preparation do you need for somebody to hand out bulletins, you know? How much training do they need? How much do you need to check their background? Now, you need to do background checks and that sort of thing in preschool, obviously, but that's really the only area, preschool and children's, where you have to do, and students, where you have to do that level of background check. But there's so many things. We had a garden committee. You had to serve there a year before you could pull weeds. I mean, seriously, let's put them out there today if they want to. So you'll make mistakes in that. Yes, sir. It depends on the position. There are obviously some positions. We have four committees now. The chairmen of those committees have been there a while because we know them and we've walked with them and we understand and we've given them a level of authority that affects everybody else. So that may be my standard of measure is how much impact is it making long term? And are they completely on their own or are they still working with other people when you put them into that position? So if a finance chairman is, we're going to know them. In fact, I'm hanging on to the one I've got. He's been there 2 years. I'm going to tell my wife yesterday I'm hanging on to him another year, you know, because I trust him. I know him. He's doing a great job. So it really depends on the level of impact they're going to have in the church. But there's so many things. Parking lot ministry. I mean, there's just so many things that don't require a lot of pre-testing before you put them to work. So that kind of helps. I think I would ask them. That question is, what level am I putting them into? And if it's, here's the thing, and this is that idea of multiplication, having that idea, and I'm going to end with this one as well. The thing is, there are people sitting in your church today that if you don't plug them into serving, they will not be there next year. That's just the reality. In fact, serving is the new front door to the church. I don't know if you know that. But it used to be the worship attendance. It used to be, for a while, it was Bible study would do it. Serving is the new front door. You can get people to serve with your church, like if you're serving in the community or that sort of thing, before you can ever get them to come to your church. Because people, even lost people, want to be a part of helping people and making a difference and doing something of value. So serving is a new front door to the church. I said it's the front door. It's one of the new front doors, and it's fast becoming where I would say it's the front door. So if you take the long-term approach to plug people in, you're just delaying their ability to connect with the church. So you've got to find ways to do that. I had this written down, there's no potential for success without the risk of failure. You've probably heard that before. So don't be afraid to take a chance on someone and they let you down. Also, the quickest way to learn something is to do it. So allow people a chance to grow under your leadership. Give them a chance to lead. Let them lead at a smaller activity for practice, perhaps. And when they begin to think they can do something, they'll start to take on more responsibility and heavier loads in ministry. Here's the sixth one. It's extremely important, is recruit. You've got to recruit. Don't do the sign-up method. I mean, just don't do it. I mean, you can do it. There's nothing wrong with having it there as one of the options. Raise your hand if you want to lead next week. How many hands go up for that, you know? Or sign up out in the hall if you want to work with babies. You know, it just... It doesn't work very well. And so your sheets end up empty, right? And you're just frustrated. That will usually get you people who are guilted into it, honestly. They felt like they had no other choice but to sign up. And we've discovered that I described the preschool situation. What we discovered was we had a lot of guilted people. One of the ways I uncovered it, because I'm always thinking at this level, not at this level. And my wife went to lunch with somebody, and she was really wanting to work with college. She works at the University of Kentucky, and she was really wanting to work with college students, mentoring young girls, college girls. How many of you would love somebody like that in your church? I mean, it's awesome, right? And she's got a a great position in the athletic department, so she's very well respected. I mean, she would just attract girls to her anyway. But she said, I don't know that I can do two things. My schedule, travel a lot, there's just, and I have to do preschool. Why do you have to do preschool? Because I want my kids to go to preschool, so they got, you know, the system is if I want my kids in there, I got to serve. She was guilted into it. Well, the best thing to do there is to free her, isn't it? I mean, it's in Christ you're free, right? You heard that? And so we needed to release her, you know, free her. And that's really how I realized, wow, I didn't realize we had that culture. That's a terrible culture to have. It doesn't get you... the fact that you're there to hold a baby and you just can't stand to be in the room, that's not a good storm. Doesn't mean you don't love kids. You just, some people are not... You don't want me in there, okay? And I love kids. Dirty diaper, I'm going to say, your mom will be here in a minute, right? I mean, just kidding. Sort of. It's the sign-up method is in fact, if somebody signs, I always say, if somebody's really eager to sign up, don't take it. and I do say this, we had a track early in the week on leadership, and I say this somewhat in jest, but somewhat in sincerity, and pastors in the room know, understand this. But when you get somebody who is just eager for a position of leadership immediately, be leery of them. They probably led somewhere else and destroyed that church, and they're coming to destroy yours. So be careful of those people who show up the first week and they just, I've led everywhere I'm at, I'm ready to serve. Got a position on your finance committee? You know, that those people are dangerous, usually. The best people are recruited. Jesus handpicked his disciples. He didn't stand out on the corner and say, how many people you want to follow? And here's the thing. The reason they're recruited is because they're probably already serving somewhere else. They're like I was as a young, in my mid-20s. I was already serving in leadership positions in the community at different places in my work. I wasn't looking for anything. I didn't need anything to fill that void in my life. And so you have to connect with them, their spiritual life, and their ability to lead. You have to make that connection for them. They will not make it on their own. But the fact is, when you do make that connection for them, you're changing their life. So, I mean, it changed mine. Again, I wouldn't be in ministry today. So keep your eyes open, watch and observe. And then I like to say, move in for the kill. You know, go and make that meeting. And I've got, as I said, I've got my eyes on several couples right now that I believe are going to be significant leaders in our church. Some people just need that little push. It's the same way when inviting people to the church, right? Most people will come if they're invited, but they won't come if they're not. And yet, statistically speaking, even with the culture we live in now, most people say they will come if somebody invites them. Same with recruiting potential leaders. Also, start early. A new leader needs time to prepare. You need to get started early enough looking for people who might lead at some point. While you're keeping that list over there, you're not asking all those immediately. You're just keeping your eye on them. You're also... I said they're also leading elsewhere, but some of the people sitting in your church don't know they have the capacity to lead. They've never been given that responsibility yet. And they may even have a spiritual gift for that, but they don't know they have that ability. It's hidden among us. And so you need to prick their hearts, find ways. That's why a leadership development culture begins to raise those people up. I'll tell you in just a second some of the things we're doing. But ultimately God teaches, instructs, and counsels, but he may use you to uncover someone's leadership potential. Give that process time to gel. Don't scare them off the first week. You know, they show up the first week and you're like, I see you as a leader in this church. Don't do that, but watch them over time to where you can help them connect with those positions. Some of the things we have done and are doing, we did this in our church plant, and we're just starting to do it in our established church, is ours was called Test Drive. I don't know if we borrowed that from somebody. I'm not sure. But it was simply a day, and we do it once a quarter, where you have the opportunity to serve in an area for a day, shadowing somebody who's doing it. And that's in every area of the church. And we make a big deal out of it. We brand it, we push it. So we have someone sitting there on the, beside the person on the soundboard, and somebody sitting there by the person on the lights. We have somebody in every preschool area. We have somebody in the parking lot. Every area has the capacity or the ability to participate in this test drive. And what we found is there's never an area that's without, that doesn't need new leaders or new people. And so we do the test drive, always get people in every area. You may have, on an average, depending on the size of your church, obviously, but for our church, we may have 40 to 60 that will participate on a given day, which is wonderful, huge. We'll usually get maybe 6 to 10 out of that. And that's okay. Imagine 6 to 10 new people every quarter. That's great. So test drive, something like that works. Short commitments, giving people the ability to opt out early. Hey, if this is not right for you, let's help you find something else. Seems to work. I'll share a couple others that we're doing in a minute. But there's someone sitting in your church, and I promise you there is, and they're ready to go, but someone either no recruited them or they haven't seen it in themselves, and your one job may be to believe in them and give them a stamp of approval so that they can be potential leaders in your church. Find them the resources they need, empower them, develop them, and then watch them grow. And imagine what you will be able to look back on, having been a part of that process from the early infancy of it to when they're significant leaders in your church. It's really a huge, huge privilege to be at that level of kingdom building. Here's the last one, and then we'll open it up for questions and dialogue we can learn from each other, is lead for life change. Again, the first one was fine. You've got to get this idea of multiplication in your head, that it really does, the kingdom really does grow that way. We're talking about that as a conference. That's the way the church grows, by planting new churches, by revitalizing existing churches. That's how the church, the kingdom grows. It's also how your church grows, that idea of multiplication. But then you're leading for life change. The connect there is recognizing someone is going to radically be different as a disciple of Christ because of your investment in them in leadership recruitment and leadership development. And some of you know that's true for you, as we said earlier. Imagine who Moses would have been had he not accepted the challenge, you know? Think about the blessings people you recruit will have in their serving, in their life of serving. One thing we're doing. I'll kind of draw it out for you. So our current structure right now, this is just how our structure works. We have 7 people on our lead team. Our ministerial staff is probably, I don't know, 16 or 17 people, but 7 on lead team. And what I recognized in them, I've been there 3 years. 2 were already there. The other 5 were new within 3 years or less. And what I recognized in them, one of my skills is recruiting. And so we recruited a really great team. So I realized I kind of want to duplicate that. You know, I kind of want to make more of those people. And so we sat down and discovered we made a list. Some of it I was already keeping, but all 7 of us made a list of people who were in the church that we felt had potential but were not currently serving in any position of leadership. They may have been doing things, but they weren't leading anywhere. We came up with a list of about 40 to 50 people. I don't remember what the exact number was. In our church. Now you can put this, you can scale this down to any size you can scale it up. We took 40 to, those 40 to 50, we recruited all of them personally.
We actually, what we did was we took the seven of us sat in a room. It's like a draft. You know, we had all their names on the board, and we pulled them out. You know, who was my team and your team, and those sort of things. It was a lot of fun. So we divided those out into seven teams, and with one of us leading each one of those, each of us recruited our own. So I was the failure of the group. I only had four people. The other side had as many as seven or so. So not everybody I recruited said yes, and that's okay. That's just part of the process. But I have four people. I think some of the others have as many as seven. So I don't know what that number is. It's maybe there's 28. I don't know. 28 to 30. I'm not sure. And so we've got this team of, say, 30 leaders, potential leaders. And here's how our process worked. We met all together twice. So we had one meeting where we talked about the church, the history, structure, budget. We just unveiled. These are general things you need to know about the church, okay? And then we had another meeting where we talked about the future. And each of these lead significant areas of our church. Every area of our church falls under them at some point. And so they all shared. I shared about this is what we see. This is the potential we see. This is where we think we're going. And then each of the teams met. It's been going on for about 6 or 8 months. We're at the tail end of it now, where we read books together. We had two books that we read together, and then we had other supplements that, you know, my team may be doing something different than this team based on the team itself. We meet together. My team is kind of the rebel group. We're behind, and we're of my schedule, and we're just rebelling against the whole system, but that's okay. We're doing some different things. But my team meets every other week. Most of the teams meet once a week. It's just how they chose to do it. But we're meeting together. And these four, and all my four guys, all my guys, I mean, I'm getting to know them. I mean, I'm walking with one of them right now through an adoption process. We're trading texts. Me and my wife are the only people other than their parents who know this process is going on. You know, so we're getting at that level of intimacy with them over the course of this time. We're at the point now where we've got meetings on the schedule, and we're going to come back together, kind of regroup, do a vision casting, that sort of thing. And then the outtake of that is each of these people, and they did it on the reason some of them said no, it's not just these weekly meetings. At the end of this process, they have to agree to two things. One, they have to agree to lead somewhere in the church. We're going to give them a position of leadership. It could be temporary, it could be long term, but they have to agree to lead something. It could be a small group, it could be a parking lot ministry, it could be an usher ministry, it could be in preschool, it could be anywhere. But we're creating positions for them to lead. So they're actually going to have a practical internship where they will actually lead under our supervision. We've been collecting those jobs for all during this process outside of them. We're now back in the draft. And so working with them, we've been getting to know them over the period. We're matching positions to them, and we'll begin placing them in positions in the next month. The other thing they have to agree to, and this we're a little more lenient on whether they actually do it or not, because it's not the force model. We want them to want to do this. We think they will, most of them. But is to participate back in this and recruit their own people, so that they are leading this process again with more people. Do you see the potential? How many of you would like 30 new high-level leaders in your church? Anybody? How many would like it the next year when there's 30 that have recruited? They won't recruit probably as many. They may only have one or two that they're working with. But how many of you like to double that and have 60 new leaders in your church in 2 years? I mean, that's pretty cool, isn't it? So that's something we're doing. The other thing we're doing, this is pretty cool. We're next, not this Sunday, but the Sunday after. The other thing that we identified, and again, you have to adapt some of this to your own church. It will be based on age of the church and size and structure and all that. But what we discovered, this is a 106-year-old church. We have a significant number of people my age, 51. We have a significant number of people my age. In church planting, I was old. And now I'm just middle-aged, you know. So we got a lot of friends our age. But a significant number, Henry Blackaby said in the Experience of God, look at what God's given you, and that's who God wants to use, you know. And so we have a significant number that came to the church when they went to the University of Kentucky, and they never left. And ours is a church that has had good days and bad days. And so these people have weathered the good days and the bad days, and they're still there. And they, everyone on the list has held positions of significant leadership in our church at some point. Everybody, every staff member knows everyone in this church. I mean, in this group. It's that type of people. We know their kids' names. They're that ingrained, that involved. Well, my question was, what kept them here? What has kept them here all that time? My second question is, are we replacing them? Because what happens when they're not there anymore? And so we're meeting with them. We're having lunch. They've all been recruited to a luncheon. Our lead staff will be there, is hosting it. I'll be standing up here like this. And we're going to brainstorm for an hour, hour and a half of what has kept you here. And then the second thing, they already know this walking into the meeting. The second thing that we're going to ask them to do is to take one of these, which are, I think there are a few singles in there, most of them are married, but take one of those couples, one of those individuals, and personally mentor. So not only are we going to tie this back in to those people who have been there a long time. And here's the other thing. When we recruited this, there's several things that went into play there. We were looking, it was a very hand-picked group because we had lots more people that could have gone on the list, but we knew they wouldn't be here more than a couple of years. Like they're med students at UK. So, okay, they're great. They'll be great leaders somewhere, but they're not even going to live here in 2 years. So we didn't put them on the list. We picked people who we knew, as far as we could tell, were going to be here for a while because we were trying to develop potential leaders for the future. So now we're going to tie it back in and connect them with most of these people, and they all were under the age of 35. We stretched that for a few. There was a 38-year-old in there or a 40-year-old. We actually have one of the groups, one of our lead team members is in his 60s. So he took an older group, and they're kind of fast tracking them. Some of them have already been placed into positions of leadership. But I don't know if that's helpful. That's been helpful for us. We're excited about it. We started last fall, we started last fall with the, well, actually before that, talking about it, but we actually started putting names on paper and recruiting last fall. We launched in about January with that first meeting, and those were pretty quick, and in between the first meeting and the second meeting, these teams are already assigned, they started meeting. And so then we came back together, you know, the second meeting. So they've been meeting all year. And so now we're just at the point where we're nearing the end and starting to plug these in, and the goal being to plug them in by the first of the year into their position. I knew you were going to ask that. I'm terrible with names. But I think I can remember it. 7 critical enemies of excellence. I think that's it. If you do 7 critical enemies, you'll find that. It's a book that deals with the things that get us off track, and everybody needs to read that. I mean, we read it together as a lead team, and then we used it with this group. It makes you ask hard questions about accountability in your life and that sort of thing. And then we use the book Home Run. It's by Maxwell and I think Kevin Myers, maybe, I can't remember, but it's the book Home Run. Maxwell is one of those. So those were the two books we assigned.
Okay.
Enemies of Excellence, maybe.
Is that Greg Sacioli?
That's it. Greg, he said his last name. I have no idea. Greg Sacioli, that is how you say it?
It's a hard name to spell. S-C-H-I-O-L-I.
Could you?
I can spell it.
Enemies of Excellence.
I'll find it and I can show you the picture of the book too on Kindle. The enemies of excellence. There it is. If anybody wants to come up and see it later, the last name is S-A-L-C-I-C-C-I-O-L-I. That's when you need a pen name, isn't it? It's been a great book. I led a group of pastors in our area through it also. It's very helpful book. Just makes you ask hard questions. Yeah.
In this first session, what were the two books that you are going to work
with? That's, yeah, Home Run and The Enemies of Excellence.
Do you use any assessment skill-based type of things, whether leaders or
fellows? Yeah, her question is, do we use assessments? We use all kinds of assessments. Within our staff, we use Myers-Briggs and DISC. We have several others and I could get them to you, but I don't know them, that we use with volunteers and key leadership. With this group, we did, our staff has also used Strength Finders. We use Strength Finders with this group. We did a couple of assessments that were free. There's a great free assessment out there from the Teal Industry, T-E-A-L. Teal Group out of the United Kingdom, and all their stuff they make free. It's a think group for Christians, and they have a leadership assessment on there that's free, and it was very helpful for me when I first took it because it identifies what type leader you'll be within the church or in the Christian world. For instance, strategic leader or pastoral leader, and a lot of times we think, well, I'm not going to be a great church leader because I think so strategically. You know, it's not that I don't love people or care for people; it's just that I think strategically. Well, there's place for all of that, and this kind of divides that out. And it's short and it's free, and we use that with everybody to help them see. Because a lot of times when we're recruiting new leaders, if they're leading out in the world, they don't see a place for that in the church because they think, well, I just got to sit with the elderly people and pray with them. You know, there's more to it than that. It could be leading teams and systems. We had in church, in our church plant, we met in two schools, and the schools were off of the roadways, and the parking was hard. Well, they had it figured out for buses and all that. It wasn't conducive for church necessarily. And so we always had a parking problem. And I was in a military town, and we had a guy who I had tried to actually recruit him to do some things and never found his sweet spot. And then I found out, did his daughter's wedding, and I found out what he does for a living. He moves troops. Like, he moves, like, the entire 101st Airborne Division from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to the Middle East. That's what he does, all right? His job is logistics. So I just went to him one day and I said, we have a terrible parking problem. Could you figure out how to make that work? I mean, the next week it was like clockwork in and out of there. I mean, he had people going everywhere. And it was Ed Leader. Yeah, I mean, you know, you did not mess up that parking. It was done right, you know. And people got in and out so quickly. It's because we identified his strength, what he could do.
and allowed him to lead in that. It just, I mean, and they still use that system today. He's gone. He's, but he, the system works.
Is the UK group Teal?
Yeah, and I can find it if you don't.
That's Teal Group, C-E-A-L?
Teal, T-E-A-L.
Yeah, T-E-A-L. Any other questions? Yeah?
Are there any requirements before you assign them to leadership in a leadership position, or those requirements you come after for the permanent position?
I'm not sure I understand.
Are there any requirements? Do you require them for them?
Oh, training. Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Before you assign them for an internship position, or
yeah,
you come after them?
It depends. It depends on the job. If they're leading in parking lot ministry, it doesn't take a lot of training. You know, we can do on the job for that. If they're leading in preschool, there is training. So, and it's pretty, you know, I mean, you want them to do certain things the right way. So it really depends on the area. But what we try to do in every area is that they're constantly trained. Sometimes it's by email, sometimes it's by meeting. You're just going to have a hard time getting everybody in a room. That's just the nature of the world we live in. So we're doing a lot of online stuff. We use Right Now Media. I don't know if you're familiar with that. There's different ones out there. Ministry Grid is out there also. But we use Right Now. It has lots of training modules in that. So we send that out to them and ask them to watch it. We can tell whether they have or not. So it really depends on the position, how high it is in the organization. But ideally, we're going to do ongoing training as we go.
Thank you.